Don't give up your daydream, transitions in a transitioning world. I'm your host, John Knuckle. I'm a private equity advisor slash author slash radio host. I want to welcome my fellow creative professionals to Don't Give Up Your Daydream, where creativity and drive meet experience and guidance. Our goal is to introduce you to guests who have gone through major transitions in their lives or careers and have landed in a better place. All of them have kept their creativity alive, and it has been vital to their success. It's a thrill today to have Michael Cranmer as my guest. Michael and I worked at the American Stock Exchange a few years back. He's now a respected musician and has a thriving wedding proposal business that I'm very anxious to hear about. Michael will be with us after these brief words. Hello, we're back, and you're listening to Don't Give Up Your Daydream. I'm John Knuckle, your host, and I want to welcome Michael Cranmer to the show. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much for having me, and congratulations to you on the success of your radio show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. It's been fun. Now, we're going to hear some music from you today, I know, but before we do, why don't you share with our listeners what you've been doing, what you're up to, you know, what's going on with Mike Cranmer right now?
Well, there's a lot to go over. I've got two bands actively working right now. I've got a burgeoning kids party business, and this is all, of course, in addition to the marriage proposal business, but more interesting, actually very interesting. I just was approached to produce my musical partner in one of my endeavors. He's approached me to produce his new show in support of his new album, but we're also creating what we think is a new model for how to fund shows and tours and at the same time be thinking about those that are in need. And the way the model works, that the proposed model as such, is that we would go for corporate underwriting of the production, and the majority of the proceeds would go to selected charities. That's brand new. We just had a great big meeting about it yesterday, and very excited about this process. And of course, I'm working with a very close personal friend and musical collaborator.
Well, wow, that sounds great.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know what? This is good. This is going to lead us off on our first tangent. So we're going to go out of the outline already.
Love the tangent.
It's about, you know, doing good. I think this is an interesting thing because, and I don't know if I shared this with you, I saw an interview with Ed Sheeran. And they asked him about all the streaming and how do you make money as a musician and everything. And one of the things he said, which is interesting, is he says, you'll be successful if you're nice. And he said, you know, people are more willing to purchase your things, to buy your albums, go to your shows, if they think you're a nice person. And he cited, like, Taylor Swift and Adele and these people that are really successful, they're perceived as being very, very nice people, which I think is an interesting thing, you know, with what you're doing. And that is sort of the, I hate to use just a millennial, but sort of that younger group's kind of mindset. So I think you're tapping into something very smart.
Well, I hope so. I think it's an innovative way to go about bringing music to the people, and I think it serves, like I said, the communities of those in need well. And we're working on our pitch materials, and we're really trying to underscore that point that this is, you know, an attempt to really help and be a service to those less fortunate than ourselves. And so it's coming from the right place. And the music itself is music that I stand behind and I support, and I play often. We play a lot of my collaborator, his name is Chris Campion, and we perform a lot of his original music out. It's really wonderful music. It's original. It's unique. You know, it's really, you know, I'm very proud of it.
Wow, that's really good. That's a great thing. And this is new because since we met last, this wasn't even something that you were speaking about, right?
It came up in the last couple of weeks. You know, I was of course honored because this is something of a new adventure for me. But it brings me deeper into the things that I care about, which are music and, of course, you know, being of service to those who are you know, downtrodden and wayward in life and so forth. It's a new development, it's brand new, and I'm beyond honored to be asked.
Wow, that's really great. You know, a lot of time, you know, I try to make sure that we speak to our listeners and try to give them a takeaway from some of the things. And you know, I hear what you're saying, and you know, the idea of doing good, along with trying to, you know, transition into your career. You know, there's so many things. You know, as I go through these interviews with people, each time I hear something different, a different approach that someone is taking that is leading them, you know, towards down a successful path. So this is a really, really good thing to hear. Let's talk about music a little bit.
Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to cue up your first song in a minute. But
okay.
I do want to ask, since we have the stock exchange background, and, you know, for you listeners, a lot of the reputation is true. We did go out after the close, and we were in the bars downtown and all of that. But Mike here was off taking music lessons. Can you share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I joined the American Stock Exchange community right after college, and one of my first orders of business after getting my first paycheck was to go out and buy a guitar. I had taken some lessons with my roommate in college, my last semester in college, and decided that I really wanted to pursue that. And I went to a place called Matt Umanoff, which is a legendary guitar store in the West Village. And bought a guitar, and then I asked for the name of a guitar teacher, and I was given the name, and I was given the caveat, do not call this gentleman if you are not serious about playing guitar. And I assured him that I absolutely was, and I ended up studying with this guy. His name is Mark Bosch, who's been around for a long time. He currently is pulling double duty, playing with Ian Hunter of Mont the Hoople fame.
Mont the Hoople,
and he's also playing with Garland Jeffries and the Coney Island Playboys. So he's pulling double duty in that way. But he has played with Jimmy Cliff. He's just posted on Facebook all the people that he's been on stage with, which include people like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Bruce Springsteen. He's an absolute phenomenal, probably one of the best guitar players I've ever seen in my life. He's incredible. So that was the sort of the embryonic stage of my playing guitar. And I used to get ribbed, sometimes not so gently, by my colleagues for not joining the after hours happy hour, if you will. And I would go right from work to take lessons, and you know, it was to me, it was time and money well spent.
Well, that's really good. You know, it's, and this is part of you know, making that transition. You have to spend those long, lonely hours. You know, everybody else is having fun. How come I have to stay in? But, you know, that's what you have to do, man, right? You know, it's like
absolutely.
I wake up at 5 o'clock every morning to write. Someone listening stays up past midnight to work on their painting. It's just what you got to do, and you know.
Yeah, it is. There is just no other choice. You have
yep.
to. It becomes integral to who you are as a person, I think.
Right. Okay. Now let's hear some of the fruits of your labor. We're
right.
going to cue up the first song, and I'm not sure the order in which the music's going to be played. So we will discuss the song after we hear it.
Okay.
Are we ready
Very
to
good.
Put that on, guys? Here we go. Mike, very, very nice. Here we are. Now we're back. Very good, Mike. I really like that a lot.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Now, that's not the that's Call Me the Breeze, obviously. JJ Cale, correct?
That's correct.
It's not the I guess most people know the Lynyrd Skynyrd version.
That's correct. Yeah. Lynyrd Skynyrd version was the first version that I came across, but
yeah.
later on I dug a little deeper and I found this and I just fell in love with it.
Now, he is JJ Cale. He's written a a number of songs that other artists have played that not a lot of people, well, some people aren't aware of.
Well, there is a there was a really strong friendship between J.J. Cale and Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
Eric Clapton. If you listen to Eric Clapton's early work, you can definitely hear the influence. Songs like "Lay Down, Sally," "Cocaine." Mm-hmm. I believe "Cocaine" is actually a J.J. Cale original.
I think
"After Midnight" is also a J.J. Cale original.
Yeah,
so there was definitely a very, very strong camaraderie and friendship between the two. And sadly, J.J. passed away, I think, in 2013 or 14.
Yeah, no, I do remember. I'm a big Clapton fan. I'm a fan because I just look at him as like the most influential person in rock and roll. At least among white guys, put it that way. Because
he
started playing that music, in England, and people, I remember reading his biography, and people were like, Clapton is God, like going crazy, and he's thinking, hey, I'm just playing a song from like 1945, just that white people have never heard it before,
Right, right. Well, he was very instrumental in sort of and creating a resurgence of blues music. Both, in the sort of the Delta blues from the South, and after the war, the inner city, like the Chicago brand of blues.
They're all worship at the feet of Buddy Guy and Muddy Waters, right?
Buddy Guy and Muddy Waters. I mean, B.B. King was a good friend of Eric Clapton's. And I respected the fact that he always paid tribute. He always named people and mentioned them by name.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Would absolutely give them their props for for being visionaries.
Yeah. Hey, let Duane Allman have all the good parts on the Layla album. I mean, come on.
That's right. That's right. Derek
parts,
the Dominos.
A lot of them. Yeah. So who are your influences? Who did you? When I was a kid, before we had all the technology, I would lay on my bed and I'll put two speakers across from each other, and I would lay my head between the speakers and listen to music. Now, if you were going to lay your head between those speakers, who were you listening to back then?
Back then, when I first decided I wanted to become a guitar player, my first lesson, I said I want to play like Stevie Ray Vaughan. Stevie Ray Vaughan, to me, at a certain point in my life, was the absolute, without question, the king of music for me. So he was one, I was born in the late 60s, so my influences span the 60s up through the 80s. I mean, a lot of people have influenced me from a lot of different, genres of music and different styles of music.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Browne is a, Jackson Browne's lyrics, absolutely, slamy. More currently, probably my number one go-to guy is a guy named Jeff Tweedy from a band called Wilco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know Wilco.
Wilco's a special
Germany,
band.
Impossible Germany, is that their song?
Impossible Germany is one of theirs. It's a later hit.
Yeah.
They were born out of a new genre of music called alt country back in the early 90s, and the members of Wilco and the members of another band called Sunvolt were in a band called Uncle Tupelo, and they sort of ushered in this new era of alt country.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a big influence on me. A lot of the 80s music that came from the UK, like Squeeze, Echo and Bunnymen, the college radio from the US in the 80s, like REM, The Replacements, were also big influences on me. REM, Murmur was in constant rotation for me. I'd be hard pressed to ever give a top five desert island list of five albums. It would be impossible for me to do.
I mean, music is a big influence on my writing, actually. I think of songs that could fit, certain chapters in my book, and that's the way I do it. It reminded me of a phrase, and I think I shared this with you, but I said the wrong person. I heard an interview with Greg Allman, and he was talking about someone who was one of his first influences, and I sadly forget who it was, but the line he used, which I love, was he played that music, he played that album so many times, he played that record white. So he just kept playing it so much. But that's, you know, that's it. That is that. That's the creative spark, right? Right there. You hear these things. But I think the difference is with people like yourself is everybody, I mean, every kid wants to play the guitar, right? We're all playing the air guitar. We're all, you know, dreaming about being a rock star or just, you know,
right,
singing on stage. What makes you different? What makes, what? How come you're up on stage and playing music and recording music now, and the thousands and millions of other people who dreamed of doing that aren't?
It's a great question. What makes me different? I think that one reason could be that you know, I was single a very long time, and I had the time to really practice and practice again and work on scales and run through songs and try to get songs to perfection. My interpretation, my presentation of those songs, you know, wanted to be perfect. I've also, what makes me different is that I'm fully aware and recognize that, you know, my life will never be in front of, you know, 80,000 screaming fans at a stadium, but my, what's very much within reach for me is to play little, you know, little gigs at little places or corporate events or events that are in people's homes where, you know, I can, you know, do my thing and present the music that I think will be well received by my audience. And so I guess I'm doing things that are within reach. You know, the notion that, I mean, even if I was a younger man, I would not have been able to, you know, step before 80,000 people and do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the top quarter of 1% that can do that.
Yeah. Well, you got to know what you're able to do or what you want to do. You know, I think that
right.
It's I guess in the manuals that will be called defining your goal.
Right.
I mean, that's what I tell my financial advisor clients. Let's define your goal. Where do you want to be? And
right.
That's good. And then you work towards, you know, achieving that goal.
Correct.
So I really like that. I really like that a lot. How long did it take for you to start getting gigs? I mean, how long did it take for you to get up there in front of people and, you know, get hired, basically, as a musician?
Well, it's been something resembling a slow burn.
Yeah.
My first gig was Thanksgiving Eve 2003 in my hometown of Greenwich, Connecticut. And for a while, it was more a matter of just, you know, the odd occasion where someone might have had a need for somebody to come in and play music for them. And then probably right around 2010, I had been hired by, we'll call it a Fortune 10 company, to go up and play at their leadership development center.
Nice.
And right. And that got me thinking about how to get more gigs like that. And
yeah.
I started becoming more aware and bringing myself up to speed with social media and what, you know, could be possible by putting my name out there to be found by event planners, meeting planners, you know, corporate folks who might want to bring me on for that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that has sped up the acceleration of you know, getting bigger gigs and more frequent gigs.
Wow. The one thing that sticks out from that, and now this is the third guest in a row that has said the same thing, and it's sort of they did it without realizing it, and that is embracing technology. I'm obviously the same, but all of our listeners should know, I mean, you have to embrace the new technology. You have to do the social media. You have to do all of it. You just do. And don't be intimidated by it. For
okay,
me, this is what we're going to do. You're going to do a live song for us, which is really a treat.
I am.
Is that correct? Yeah. All right. Do you know what you're going to play? I bet you
do.
Could you tell us?
Absolutely. It's a song called California Stars, and
okay.
It's by Wilco. It's off the album that they did with Billy Bragg called Mermaid Avenue, and it's originally a rearranged Woody Guthrie song, actually.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to a commercial break. Going to give Mike a chance to get his guitar set up, and when we come back, we'll hear from Mike singing a live song.
Financial transactions for a fee. That is what we call the VIG. Enter into the thrilling financial crime world penned by John Knuckle, author of the Rector Street series. Tweet at John Knuckle, take me to the hashtag Rector Street series for an entry to win a copy of the VIG. Pin the tweet and tell friends for a chance to win this series in paperback or ebook.
Williams. Even though I never knew my father, Hank Williams, his legacy taught me the meaning of lending a helping hand. That's why I support the Orphan Foundation of America. OFA is committed to providing education, mentoring, and a workplace readiness for thousands of teens aging out of the foster care system. With the help of OFA's support programs, these young people can go to college and trade school, graduate, and make the leap from foster care to success. To learn how you can help, visit orphan.org.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm well.
Okay. I thought we lost you. Well, maybe I lost. You know, I have these. I think I had a senior moment there, but that's okay. So we're back. We're ready to go. You ready? You ready to let it rip?
Absolutely.
Let's go.
All right. This is California Stars.
Thank you.
Mike, that was great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, really good. Really, really good. I could hear the guitar work perfectly. It really sounded nice.
Oh, that's great. I love to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, very, very. Now, how was the harmonica when that came in as far as your learning?
A couple years in, my guitar teacher early on said, you know, there's a million gunslingers out there, meaning a lot of guys who can shred and play lead guitar. You'd be well served to, really work on your rhythm. And I started really zeroing in on people like Neil Young and, folks like that who incorporate a lot of harmonica into their work. And what I've found is that, especially when I'm doing solo gigs, the harmonica really works in place of a fuller band, like a keyboard or a lead guitar.
Yeah, yeah, much fuller, richer sound, right?
I think so. I mean, it adds certainly a nice touch to it when played properly. So yeah, I've got harmonicas in many keys, so I can insert it into songs that are in D or E or G or whatever.
Wow, very nice, very nice. I want to ask you, because we do try to, try to be a little bit about, although I would love this just to be us talk about music the whole show, but a little about transitioning and helping people transition. My theory is that if you find that one thing, that creative spark or if you have a creative spirit, that it flows through your work life and it really helps you get through every day, and every day you can do something that's a positive step. So I want to ask, how does your performing career affect your day-to-day work life?
In a couple ways. Well, I mean, from just a just digress one second, purely as a logistical thing, it blurs the line to the point of where there is no line between performing and doing my work, because it's just the days just roll into each other, and I'm on a 24/7 cycle. So, but having a creative outlet, I think, especially in this unique situation that I find myself in, I feel makes you more heart and soul centric as people, and I believe that sort of inner, without sounding too trite, but that sort of inner glow that comes from that, I think is pervasive, and it comes out in your work and how you interact with your colleagues and more importantly, your clients. And I think your clients see a better version of yourself because you do emanate this you know, heart-centric quality that I think especially now, I think things are so tough right now that when people meet other people that are authentic and carry that sort of inner light with them, I think that it can only be good.
Yeah. No, I well, obviously this is my mantra, you know. I mean, like personally, I look at it as being a writer. One thing I had to do right away was I had to learn to listen better, because everyone has a story. There's a story everywhere if you just stop and listen.
Absolutely.
Hear what people are saying, how they're saying it, how they fiddle with their glass as they're trying to explain something, whether they sit up straight, the tone of their voice, and you start, and that's how I found that, you know, it started flowing through my work life also, because I think I was a more attentive, more passionate person, you know?
Passionate, compassionate, and more empathetic,
yeah.
I would guess.
Yeah. I think you're right. That is really, really cool. What else was I going to say? Oh, this is touching on that, the part about embracing technology. I was on your wedding proposal website.
Okay.
Which we'll get all your websites later. And
okay.
The use of the GoPro in the film, I mean, this was like a romantic, well, it wasn't a comedy, but it was like this really, really fine, well-done little film about a wedding proposal. It's just so cool. I would assume you share that with the customers. Well, before we get into details, tell us about your wedding proposal business. I think it's the coolest idea, and I think the listeners would love to hear about it. So
okay.
Tell me all about it.
So I came into it rather by accident. I've got a profile on a gig website called Gig Salad, and December 2012, a gentleman from Buffalo called me up and said, "Listen, I'm going to be coming down to New York City. I'm going to, with the idea of proposing to my girlfriend, and I'm going to do it in Rockefeller Center." And I said, "Sure, that sounds very doable." And it's, you know, what's the song? It was an easy song. Forgive me. And so that was the first one I got. And it was right in Rockefeller Center, which it gave way to a little bit of humor, because the holidays in Rockefeller Center, it's wall to wall people, and
yeah, it's a big hectic down there.
You are actually not allowed to transact business unless you have a special permit.
So
there I am. I've got my gig bag out, and I'm dressed up in a blazer, and I'm sitting there with my guitar, and a guy who reminded me of the old Flatfoot cops came up to me, and he said, "Wait a second here, pal. You're not making money off this, are you?" And I said, "No. I'm just doing a friend a favor. I'm just playing a song. He's going to be getting here in about 5 minutes. We're going to be out of here in 3 minutes, and he's just going to propose to his girlfriend." "All right, pal. Well, you know, just as long as you're not making any money, it's all I care about." And so that was the first one, and I got a couple more after that. And I realized that there might be something to this. I might have happened into a niche business by accident. And so what I did was start partnering up with a couple of photographers and a videographer. And I started offering a bundled package of music, photography. And now what I've added to that, it's a small touch, but I think it's a nice and important touch, is that I bring a rose, a single red rose, and a little mini bottle of champagne with a couple of cups for after the deed is done. And so I created I realized that I was onto something, so I created a website, you know, Marriage Proposals by Mike. At the time, I couldn't think of really anything better, so I went with that, and I created it on VistaPrint. And, talk about embracing the technology. You know, I've been trying to get a little bit of a mastery of search engine optimization, which is proving to be no small feat. I know that you've been working on that
I'm
as well.
Yeah, I'm taking a class at NYU to try to figure out this Google machine that we have here.
So,
I really am.
You know, so it really has developed nicely. I mean, each year has gotten better since December 2012, and I've actually got a proposal this weekend. And the end goal for me, obviously the real nice thing is if you could ask to play at the wedding, and I have been asked my musical partner in another endeavor, and we played a song called Ho Hey by the Lumineers, he on mandolin, me on guitar, and we were in Chinatown because the song content, you know, calls for a trip to Chinatown. Okay. So there we were, standing underneath the awning of a Chinese restaurant, playing the song, and basically the couple came, and it was like stop motion photography. The entirety of the intersection of Elizabeth Street and Bayard Street stopped. Uh-huh. And everyone reached for their iPhones and were filming the proposal as it was happening in real time. So I realized I was kind of really onto something here, and it's really quite an honor to be, you know, almost a voyeur looking at, and probably one of the most intimate things that, you know, happened between
now, do they, is it a surprise? It's a surprise to the fiance, the girl, correct? Usually?
99.9% yes. I did have one where the proposal was more or less a formality.
Okay.
But she, you know, played the part and played the surprised girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So.
That's great. And I saw on the video, I mean, the use of, I'm assuming you used the GoPro.
That was a GoPro, in fact. Yes.
I mean, that's the technology also. I'm watching, and the couple's walking through Central Park, and someone's behind them filming it, and it was almost like dramatic, like leading up, when are they going to get there? And then all of a sudden, I say, hey, that's Mike.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I love the GoPro. I think it's an ingenious device. It's not perfect. You know, one of the things that, you know, a lot of GoPros do not have a viewfinder in the back. And so what they do to address that is there's an app that you can get on your phone where there's a Wi-Fi in the GoPro, and you basically dial into that, and that gives you, on your phone, gives you a way to adjust the GoPro to capture it.
Wow.
So in that particular instance, we had two GoPros going. One capturing the walk to me, and then I had one near me on the wall at the Gapstow Bridge.
Yeah.
Basically what ended up happening was the GoPro, or my phone rather, picked up somebody else's Wi-Fi, and so it disconnected my GoPro, so we only had one GoPro, but we were originally going to have two.
Wow.
So, but the idea is to, I mean, that's one thing I do offer. We can have two GoPros, you know, on hand, and my videographer would do is, you know, splice the two and then, you know, edit it in such a way that you capture both.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, when are the drones coming in, the wedding drones?
I like to be on a wedding drone. Drop me in to a wedding proposal. So
I just happened to
be dropped out of a plane. I actually did have I have a new bucket list item that I would like to have happened in this you know, business of marriage proposals. I was in England at the end of August, and I realized that the London Eye would be a great place to do, like, get a little private capsule. It might be a little tough to explain why there's a guitar player and a rose and a mini bottle of champagne in with just, you know, the couple. But
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, I mean, and that, to talk about a film, I mean, filming that would be pretty spectacular. It really would.
Absolutely.
It really would. So we do have another. What is the other thing I want to ask? Oh, this is. Well, I guess we sort of touched on it, but you know, I look at it with me writing. My phrase has always been, when people ask me, how do I feel about writing and spending my time? And like you, you know, I wake up early to do it, and I do all those things. But I say, not only do I always have something to do, but I always have something I want to do. And that is, in my normal day-to-day life. You know, say it's the market closes or something. You know, I can just start fiddling around on a story I was thinking of. How does your music and your passion for music, how does it affect you in your normal day-to-day life, you know?
How does it affect my normal day-to-day life?
I mean, do you pick up the guitar if it's you had a meeting that was canceled or you have something that isn't due for a couple hours, do you pick up the guitar and play?
Yes. One of the things that I've been working on is developing a mastery of other stringed instruments, and
okay.
including the banjo and the ukulele, both of which I use for my kids' parties. And banjo in particular is a very, very difficult instrument. And it's actually, for anyone listening out there thinking about getting their kids started on stringed instruments, a banjo is, I think, the better way to go because you have to, in some ways, unlearn what you know about guitar to become better at banjo.
Yeah.
And so I have a little lawn right across from my apartment, and I go out there with, you know, the banjo and the guitar, and I just work on my rolls, and, you know, I always have an eye on trying to become more proficient with that. Same with the ukulele. Ukulele is a little bit easier, I would say, to
mm-hmm.
learn and become proficient at. But it's a beautiful instrument, and there's no such thing as a sad sound out of it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm always thinking about when is there going to be an opportunity in my day to just run through songs or just noodle around on things that I'm working on. And I've arrived at, you know, when my wife comes home to you know, put my son to bed and so forth and do their stories, I figure that's always a good time, and it's very quiet and tranquil, and I can just, you know, go out and have fun with that for a little while.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. And this is, once again, for the listeners, to have this creative thing and this creative spirit and this thing that you're working on, what a gift it is. It really is. It's a gift. And sometimes, I know it's happened with me, and I'm sure it's happened with you, Mike, where you think, like, well, what am I doing it for? No one's listening to my music. No one's reading my words. But it is, you know, someone told me a great story about a man who's retired. This gentleman's father is about 80 years old, long retired, and he was a violinist, you know, at a symphony level violinist, professional. And even though he's 80 years old, every single day he goes outside, just like you, that's what reminded me of this story. And he plays the violin for like a couple hours. And he goes out there when it's dark, when it's cold, I don't think in the rain, but cold. And the son asked him, like, why do you do this all the time? He goes, well, because that's what I love to, you know, why do you do this? No one's going to hear you. No one's listening to you. You don't play professionally anymore. And the father said, you know, I have to do it. This is what I do. I think that's just, it's so important to stay with it and keep doing those things that, you know, keep you alive, you know?
Well, it becomes so ingrained in your being that you're, that does become, and it has to do with, you know, the drone of the strings that just, they resonate in your head, they resonate in your heart, you know, when you strum a guitar and it's perfectly in tune. I mean, that ripples.
Yeah.
At least for me, it ripples through me, and
yeah.
So there is that sort of you know, spirit. There's a spirituality to it. There's a physicality to it. There's an emotional component to it as well. I mean, it hits a lot of different notes.
Yeah.
Pardon the
yeah.
expression. But
all
yes.
Right now, I have a good transition now, because you just mentioned notes, and I think we're going to play our third. This is the third song. This is going to be live. This is a tape. And, well, since you sent to, you know which one this is going to be, don't you?
I do. It's a song called Windfall, and
okay.
it's by a group called Sunvolt, who I alluded to earlier. They were members of Sunvolt, came out of Uncle Tupelo, and they basically split up into two bands. This song, there's something about this song. It's you know, the original version of it is very kind of stripped down. And it's just got a great quality to it, I think, and I hope my version of it does it justice, because it's a beautiful song and it's got great harmonies, and it's, you know, the wood and the guitar sounds phenomenal to me, and I hope that any listeners out there that know the song or know the band will appreciate the version. So,
okay,
Windfall by
great.
Sunvolt.
Great, let's cue it up. Nice, Mike.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Really good. I think you did it justice. I wanted to end our time together with music, so we're just about at the end, but I wanted to make sure that you shared with everyone your website, maybe some of your upcoming gigs, where you can be found, all of that. So give us the information, please.
Okay, so my website is marriageproposalsbymike.com. You can also find me on Facebook at the same URL, facebook.com/marriageproposalsbymike. I'm on Twitter at mgcran, C-R-A-N. And in terms of gigs, I have a biweekly gig going at a little place in the Lower East Side of New York called The Roost. It's a fantastic place, and I look forward to playing every other week or whenever is possible. It's got great brick walls and wood floors, and the acoustics are just amazing. I'm also playing with my colleague Chris Campion next Friday at Pizza Tavern in Bronxville. We're playing tomorrow night in Long Beach, Long Island, at a place called Cabana. And it's a really, really fun set. Our tagline for that is left of the dial, right of the Hudson.
Very nice. All right, that's all great. Thank you so much for coming, Mike. It really, really, having a musical show really was, I really enjoyed this. I wish we could be on for another hour.
Me too. Thank you so much, Sean. I really appreciate it. It was great to be here.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, I want to speak about the power of music for some final words.
Sure.
Recently, I was crying in a synagogue in Prague. Now, that's not a sentence I ever thought that I would say, but it's true. I was on vacation
every day.
Well, I was on vacation with my family, and we attended a Gershwin concert in the Spanish synagogue in Prague. The setting was beautiful. The synagogue is one of the premier architectural sites in Europe. The music was sublime. Three violins, a cello, and bass, accompanied by a trumpet. It was Rhapsody in Blue that got to me. When the trumpet came in, you have to understand something. I'm not a crier. I'm a big tough guy, a big Irish Catholic from New York. So I'm ruining my whole persona by telling you this right now. But there we were. There they were, the tears running down my face. Like any emotional outburst, it came as a surprise even to me. I wiped my tears, got through the rest of the concert without incident, and went out to dinner. I thought about it the next day, trying to make sense of it all. Am I just getting old and emotional? What's next? Do I start crying over Hallmark cards or commercials with cute puppies? Then I thought maybe it was the tour. The day of the concert, we went on a tour of the Jewish cemetery. Prague is a city that had 90,000 Jews before World War II and about 1,200 after. The cemetery is unique because to fit all of the graves in the space provided, they had to stack them on top of each other. The cemetery is a landscape of rolling hills in the center of a bustling city. I'm sure that was on my mind as I sat and listened to George and Ira's masterpiece. Or it could have been the composers themselves that moved me to tears. Two New York Jewish artists whose music has outlasted the oppressors. Yes, the power of music to lift me, lift us in a place of such tragedy. Well, maybe not. You see, as a writer, I tend to try to tie a bow on things, come to a logical conclusion to the story. Not necessarily a happy ending, but an ending. The thing is, neither of those thoughts, as moving as they are, were the reason for the tears. It was just beautiful. That's all. That is the power of music. The power to make a middle-aged man cry in public. As creative people, this is what we strive for. This is why we create. To share it with people and hopefully touch them in some way. Now, I'm no Gershwin. I don't expect tears. Maybe someone will stay up late one night to finish one of my books or finish a chapter before leaving the train platform. That would be enough for me. How do you want to affect people? How are you going to share your creativity? I can't answer the question for you because I'm still trying to figure it out myself. I do know one thing. Nothing will happen if you give up. There is no way you'll make a random person tear up on the other side of the world if you don't finish what you started. So hang in there. Don't stop creating, and don't ever give up on your daydream. I have a lot of people to thank. I mostly want to thank the listeners for your support. It's been wonderful. I want to thank our sponsors. Of course, thank Mike for his great music today. Also, Storytellers Campfire has been just wonderful and so supportive. You can see them at storytellerscampfire.org. I would also love it if you could visit the website for the show, which is don'tgiveupyourdaydream.webs.com. Also, I am very excited. I have a brand new website up and running, and it's johnnuckle.com. On that site, you can find my blogs, my published articles, and maybe you can pick up a book or a short story. Well, that is going to be it for the show. Thank you so much for being here, and be well.